Thank you for being here on time. As you know, just from Tuesday last week, we had to shift off our meeting on Tuesday. We had to delay this meeting by an hour, given the need to go over certain other issues. But in future, we will go back to 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. The said members are quite well aware about that. Now, we'd like to welcome everyone here. Again, going back to the previous, just before we rose for constituency break, you will recall we had a meeting around steel, which CDD also attended. I'm just looking, I know that the chairperson of CDD, Honourable Coleman, thank you very much, is here, and we took that joint decision of both committees that we would have such a joint meeting, at which not only would the DTI minister be invited, but also the EDD minister. We did get an apology from the EDD minister to indicate he had been unexpectedly called and had to attend to another issue in Swanee, and I'm just looking at this, he's addressing a conference there. So, with us in his place, and also part of EDD, is the deputy minister, Dala Masuka. Thank you very much. Of course, our own minister, Dr. Rob Davies, DDG here, we will introduce in due course. But I do want to acknowledge the presence of my co-chair, that is the Honourable Coleman, who is here, and the Committee of Economic Development. Thank you very much. On that particular note, we will then look at the apologies and get Mr. Hermans to address that.
Chairperson received an apology from Advocate Elvis, as well as Mr. Shivambu. Also again, Mr. Isleden will be attending the Energy Committee and as well during the course of this meeting.
Just while I'm on the subject of opening welcome and apologies, most of us are aware that the new rule book has been issued, they have been passed, and I'm sure every member has either got one in their hands, and if they haven't, you've been emailed a little lot. Now, these are the rules that now apply, and that includes the attendance at committee meetings. And it's very, very clear about how that is run. So I'd appeal to members to look at those pages, study them, and then see how committee meetings should be run. Thank you very much. Can we please have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Williams, seconded by. Yes, Honourable Colonel Fair. Now we have engagement with the Minister, that's the Minister, Dr. Rob Davies, the DTI on the impact of steel and strategic commodities on the economy. We should also just indicate, as I said in the opening, that the Minister, or the Deputy Minister in this case, will also be making his own comments after the Minister of Trade and Industry. And Minister, if you could just indicate the team you have brought along with you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just say that you've already recorded the apology from Minister Patel. This has been an issue that we've been working very closely together over, and I think it's one of the issues where we can say there have been no silos. There have been things in each of our toolboxes which we've been able to deploy on some very, very difficult questions. And so, as you indicated, the Energy Minister Masuka and the Governor Masuka is here with me, sitting next to me. Then we've got Garth Strachan, who is the Deputy Director General of Industrial Development. There's Tanya Familis, who's from EDD, but also is a member of the ITAC. The Commissioner of ITAC is at the back there. Sefo Lela. There's Mohammed, who's from EDD. There's Umisha Naidu, who's from DTI. Other members of the team from DTI are sitting here as well. So let me just say we've got, I think, a lot of the leading officials with us have been from the two departments and from the different agencies who have been working on this issue. I'm going to run through this presentation, which is in 15 parts, as you can see them there. have to say that I think the overall message is going to be that we've had to take on the question of the steel industry a number of decisions in circumstances which are not of our choosing, in very difficult circumstances, with risks of all sorts if we didn't steer ourselves in an appropriate way through this minefield. We have been trying to take decisions in which there have not been ideal type decisions available to us. We've had to go for, in many cases, second best choices. We have been pursuing the objectives which I think we've been trying to define for some time in the steel industry. We are a significant iron ore producer. We have inherited the steel industry primary steel manufacturing. We need to ensure that we retain primary steel manufacturing, but the primary steel manufacturing using the resource that we have and adding that value that it does is really supposed to be a feeder into downstream manufacturers in a way which is not price disadvantaging those downstream manufacturers. I think that, as I said earlier, you'll see that there's a number of tools that we've been deploying in this very difficult circumstance that we found ourselves in, and that circumstance has required us to deploy things like tariff decisions. It's involved decisions about designations for the infrastructure build program. And then I think yesterday, as you all saw, and I think it was very fortuitous that it was going on at the same time as the competition investigation, which has resulted in certain penalties, but also certain commitments, which I think are part of the overall toolbox. So let me start on the context. I think we all know that the global economy is depressed, but not just depressed in general. There are also specific features that are affecting countries that are mineral commodity exporters and producers. The decline in the mineral commodity price has been very significant. It's impacted not just on South Africa, but many other mineral commodity exporting countries. Many of the countries on the African continent are beginning to see the effects of this. And then, as we have been trying to do for some time, to diversify our economy, move up the value chain and industrialize, I think that the second feature, which has been particularly difficult for us, is that we have had a global oversupply of steel, that there's a glut, as it's called, that we have steel production in excess of demand, as the circumstances are at the moment. And that has been, I think, linked, I think most analysts would agree, it's been linked to the structural changes that are going on in the People's Republic of China, where they're moving away from the growth path based on exports and manufactures in the developed world. They're moving towards a consumption-driven growth path. They have been on a much less mineral-intensive growth path, and also that they have excess steel capacity, and that excess steel capacity has resulted in exports, particularly from China, and that has been knocking steel industries around the world. And that I think that is just worth pointing out that in the G20 trade ministers meeting, and I think it will also be on the summit, the developed world were raising the question, this question, steel glut, as a global issue that has to be confronted. And as you can see on the bottom bullet there, forecasts predict that oversupply of 400 million tons per annum will remain for some time, and that with the declining global demand, China accounts for about 50% of global steel production. That's the reality we're in. There is a graph which is basically telling us that the situation up to now, and then the outlook, and it's basically telling us that plant utilization will stay below 80% for the next few years. Global overcapacity has been increasing, and that it is likely to continue to be a feature for some time to come. Now, what does this mean? It means that there are huge competitive pressures for basically the reduction of capacity and even the closure of steel plants around the world. I think we have seen a number of cases where that has happened in the developed world and so on. And that there is basically a struggle to remain in business and active. And I'm going to come to why it's strategically important that we retain primary steel manufacturing capability in South Africa. But in South Africa, our efforts to retain primary steel capacity are coming up against aged plants and inefficiencies, which I think we've seen over some time, and we've been concerned for some time about lack of
more sustainable steel industry than we've had, balancing the interests of support
between steel manufacturers. So you had to make choices, preserve steel manufacturing, and try to do this in such a way that we can also get some advances in some of the concerns that we've had about some of the policies in the past, and particularly to try to balance support for upstream and upstream steel industries. So what have we come up with? The package of interventions has included the following. First of all, we increased the tariffs for primary steel products within the policy parameters and the new process. So the new process refers to it's not that ministers make decisions about tariffs. The way tariffs are set in this country is that applications are made to the International Trade Administration Commission, which follows new process, considers the pros and cons of a different application, and makes a recommendation to ministers. That's what's actually happened. Makes a recommendation to the Minister of Trade and Industry, actually. And so what's happened is that we have, in the past, as I think you probably know, when we adopted our developmental trade policy, we said there was no a priori decision about whether we raised or lowered tariffs. And one of the tariffs that we lowered because of the pricing in implications for downstream industries was primary steel making. It was 5%. We lowered it to 0. And under the circumstances we found ourselves in with the entry of products coming from China, we raised the tariff to the maximum down rate. Different products came in different phases. The last was hot rolled coil, and that came in, and the maximum down rate is 10%. There were downstream support measures, including the deployment of tariffs, a review and deployment of rebates. This is for the downstream industry. This is ongoing work. We're looking to see what are the tariff and potential rebates issues that downstream steelmakers need, and that is ongoing work. There was an agreement on a set of principles for flat steel pricing in South Africa, ensure that it's priced appropriately, and the steel-dependent industries are competitive, while at the same time ensuring that upstream steel mills remain sustainable. That is the balance we have to try to ensure. Increase local procurement by government in the infrastructure programs. We'll come to some of the detail on that, but basically locally manufactured steel was not part of the designation of the infrastructure program. Now it is. And then there was a settlement of the Competition Commission issues with ArcelorMittal South Africa. That came in yesterday, and a slide on that as well. But the fact that this was ongoing, I think, was a significant part of the overall interactions that we were able to have. So there's what we've done. There's the, I've already mentioned that, the duty to 10%, and that of the different products that have been subjected to those tariff increases. And then the commitments have been there. There's been investment commitments, improving competitiveness on various product lines. Job creation and job retention, there have been those commitments have been quid pro quo, if you like, for the tariffs. The pricing remedy, an agreement on a suitable pricing model with government. We'll come to the details of that in a moment. And then commitments on industrial output. All of those have been the commitments that have been required in return for the tariff decisions. And there was one other thing that we put in as well, I put in myself, that they cannot raise the price as a result, the direct result of the tariff increase. Not that we said never raise the price, but that you cannot raise it and give you a 10% suddenly raise 10% off your domestic price. Now, in terms of the price commitments, in terms of Section 14 of the International Trade Administration Act, a steel committee was established. This is a committee that's allowed to be established under that section of the Act. And the way the law works is it says that there are people from ITAC commissioners, equal number of commissioners, and representatives of the industry concerned. That's what it says. So the members of ITAC are there. And then these are members of the industry. There are their names. I'm not going to go through them all. But you can see they represent different parts of the iron and steel value chain. They are there. And then the DTI and EDT officials, the people who are sitting around me here, are party participating in all the meetings and providing technical support and advice to the committee. That's what we put in place. That's to manage the price issue. The roles and responsibilities of the committee are to basically evaluate all the different obligations, the performance against the reciprocal commitments, including pricing, investment upgrading, technology employment, the steel pricing for all steel products using a market pricing methodology, flat steel, we'll cover that in a moment, the performance with regard to new investments and growth, import and export trends relevant to the industry, and the preparation of reports and recommendations to the Commission, at least biannually. So the Commission is not doing this as a blank check. This is subject to performance on these reciprocal obligations. I think this chart is telling us the summary of the investment commissions commitments. You'll see there's different elements of it, color line capacity, ladle furnace, and continuous annealing to galvanizing, double reduced tin plate, different elements of this. It comes to a total capital expenditure of 4.6 billion rand. And there is the graph below is showing us the planned investments that would eventually hit that target by 2019. So those are the investment commitments, and it's the responsibility of that steel committee to ensure that those investment commitments are forthcoming as they're supposed to. Then on Vereeniging and Highveld Steel, AMSA is in the process of restarting the Vereeniging melt shop. Highveld Heavy Structural Mill, together with IDC, retention of 300 jobs that were supposed to all disappear with the Highveld Steel closure. Highveld Steel, as you probably know, has gone into business rescue, but there's a commitment now by ArcelorMittal in that regard. And then there's a number of other things, recent duties and designations. Cape Iron Steel works, will restart Longstream plant. There'll be significant investment in technology. There's a preliminary 12i tax incentive approval. That's the approval for investment tax incentive. Measures to support better access to domestic scrap metal. These are critical. As you may well know, there's a price preference system that's been introduced as a measure to give a preference to local users of scrap metal, and that's been subject to a number of court challenges, which is holding it up. And then National Treasury is developing guidelines for export tax application. So I think that's something else that's emerging in the toolbox for scrap metal-based steel manufacturing. They have developed the guidelines. The current status in the foundries, we have approximately 170 foundries that operate the formal sector with an output of 374,000 tons, 13,000 employees. There's been a serious capacity decline since 2010 with 25 foundries closed and loss of 1,700 jobs. And in 2015-16 alone, 9 foundries were closed and 635 jobs were lost. 3 foundries have applied for business rescue. The challenges are the cost of scrap, as well as energy and labor, compliance with the environmental legislation, air emissions, license fees, fines, and things like that, particularly in the case of Highveld Steel. There's a strong response in localization policy by state-owned companies, skills development and accreditation. These are all issues that are confronting the foundries. The tariff review, the DTI requested ITAC to leave a proactive investigation of downstream tariffs. That's what we've been asking now. So we've done it for the primary steel maker, and now we're looking at the downstream industries. ITAC are working with the industry through associations, including targeted workshops, roadshows, to compile the required information. One of the complaints that we received was that the downstream steel users are, many of them are smaller companies, and they say the cost of an ITAC investigation is quite high, and so we try to find methods that we can actually bring them together and have an investigation And these are the different products. I'm not going to go through the list of the tubes and pipelines fittings and ends up with rail parts. I think it's a question of what does the downstream industry need. There have been rebates, various rebates on steel that is used in manufactured goods exclusively for export. That's readily available. There's another bunch of rebates for products which are using steel which is not produced or insufficiently produced in the country. This is something which is a different measure, but it's determined on a case-by-case basis. And ITAC are working on the creation of a schedule for hot rolled coil and plate, there's a possible rebate provision that could emerge here as well. Local procurement, as I said already, primary and downstream, both of them have raised a concern about the need for increased local take-up of their products. Primary producers requested government to reconsider the public procurement of locally manufactured primary steel as a designation, and that has led to a review of the deeming of steel as one of the measures to support the industry. And there's a revised instruction note which previously had undeemed. So primary steel was not something that was designated in the past. Now there's a note to allow it to the localization of locally produced primary steel coming in those different manufacturing centers. And many additional designations are being considered to support downstream job intensive steel sectors in areas from fabricated structural steel to fasteners, joining and connecting components. The pricing principles. The fair pricing principles, are being agreed between the two parties, are first of all that import parity pricing will no longer be the basis of pricing. This has been the concern that we've always had for a long time, that the price of domestically produced steel has been supplied in the market on the basis of what the import parity price would be. Right now, of course, the import parity price is much lower than the domestic price, which is the challenge it's faced. But at least we now say that this will be removed in the future. The pricing principles will exclude long products. Is that the flat products are the more value-added products, the ones that we want to focus on, unless specifically stated, but it doesn't exclude those. The lower price for flats of products will be based on an import-weighted basket that excludes Russia and China. It will be determined by the weighted average of companies with whom we compete in this basket, and will be based on primary data from the CRU and the MEPS Global Steel Indices, so it will be the international indices. There will be agreed benchmark deltas, as they're called, and then averages that will be used to calculate the extra. So essentially, there's a fairly complicated formula, but it's based on a basket of competitive prices. And when Absolute uses flat steel prices, this will be done on a transparent mechanism based on the forecast basket prices. Quarterly monitoring of import weighted basket and compliance, this will be done by the committee. And then you'll see there's something called EBIT cap. And this is actually one of the things that came through the competition yesterday. EBIT is earnings before interest and tax. And you'll see that when I come in a moment to the slide on the competition ruling, there was an EBIT limit. They can't raise beyond the EBIT limit asset. The steel pricing there is the weighted average. There are the countries in the basket. There are the various deltas, as they're called, over the hot roll coil based price. There are some indication of the steel intensive imports and where they come from. And then this is the slide on the overall aim of the basket. It aims to provide a fair price during boom and bust periods. So we're trying to get a pricing policy that applies not just now, but as there's a recovery, that there's a close correlation between the basket and AMSA prices from early 2015 as the slump began to take effect. But global market prices have increased since February 2016 as countries introduced tariffs and other measures, and then the prices came down since June. So this is the
import rates of rye and basket, and then this is AMSA, the impact of prices. There is a fairly close correlation that exists now, but I think we want to make sure that as things move up, that there's not a big divergence either. This is the Competition Commission settlement. As you know, that there was an investigation and then there was a settlement that was reached, and that it was yesterday that the announcement came through. Well, first of all, it was that it was an investigation into price fixing, the disadvantage of steel users in this country. And as a result of the settlement, AFSA admits that it was involved in long steel and scrap metal cartels and agreed to pay an administrative penalty of 1.5 billion rand, 5 annual installments of no less than 300 million. So there's a fine. You might have heard Minister Patel say that as our legislation stands at the moment and all that's available, but that additional responsibilities for individuals involved in that, including criminal penalties, is under consideration. But at the moment, that's what's available. AMSA agreed to remedies relating to complaints against this pricing conduct. It's undertaken that for a period of 5 years, it will limit its EBIT margin to a cap of 10% for flat steel products sold in South Africa. So that's the EBIT earnings before interest or tax. It won't be able to increase those, even if the tariffs improve to more than 10%. And that margin cap will be subject to a possible variation up to 15%, subject to certain market circumstances, as set out in the agreement. AFSA has agreed to this 4.6 billion capital expenditure, and I think that that's the gist of the competition settlement. So, as I say, by way of concluding remarks, given the current severe challenges, we think that we didn't have any easy solutions, any nice choices between wonderful and horrible. We had to choose mixtures and choices between what is available under the circumstances we found ourselves in. We prompted this to develop a solution which basically will ensure the continued production of prime steel in South Africa and at the same time address some of the structural challenges that we've had about the pricing policy. The key objective is to stimulate the economy, ensure that we come out of this crisis with steel making intact, that we sustain a more competitive steel produce capacity, and that we support, this is our focus, the more value-added labor-intensive downstream industries. The key up to optimum output is an end-of-state, more competitive, more sustainable steel industry in South Africa. And that's the last word from me. I don't know whether the Deputy Minister wants to add anything, but it's up to you, Chair, the Deputy Minister wants to add something.
No, certainly. Thank you very much, Minister in Industry. Deputy Minister Masuku, do you wish to add to that or make any comments? Thank you.
No, Chair, I wouldn't like to add because we are an outcome for team that were loosely and technical capacity. And this presentation was actually a joint presentation. But say to remember that the key areas that the EDD is playing a major role is on clearing of the playing field for competition to take part. And we also look at issues of development funding. That make sure that we save and create jobs, and we also look at issues of promotion of beneficiation and increase and in this industry, because the merchant industry, we see it as an industry that is actually key to industrialization, given the kind of demand that we have in terms of our infrastructure development, heavy infrastructure development that we have in the country, and major other responses and clarification will give it as a member's resolutions.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Anyone else from your team or whoever's either with the Economic Development, ITEC, the Department of Trade and Industry, right? Members, at this point then, we'll turn to yourselves, not only questions, of course, but comments as well. And indeed, if there are any clarifications, please let's get there as well. Today, time is on our side to some extent, but let us enable everyone to try and get their piece in and restrict ourselves initially. There'll be several rounds. Let us restrict ourselves to 3 minutes maximum in this round. Thank you. I saw the Honourable MacPherson, his hand up first, followed by the Honourable Esterhazen, followed by the Honourable Kornhoff, the Honourable, is it Matthias, comrade, Honourable Matthias? No, I'm looking at the person right in front, the Honourable Member. Mabata. Okay, sorry about that. My apologies to you. Let's just get on with the list. We'd like you all to hear your names. The Honourable Nkongi, the Honourable Mantashe. Did I miss anyone for the moment? That's the first round. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister, for being here today. I just want to say that I'm a bit disappointed because I'm not sure how we talk about the challenges in the steel industry or the problems in the steel industry without the chief protagonist in the steel industry, that being ANSTO or ArcelorMittal, not being there today. And I specifically requested in our meeting before we adjourned, before Parliament rose, that they be here so they can actually account for a number of things that they have done. And that we could also interrogate them. So I just want to place on the record my happiness that they're not here, because they are a big part of the problem that exists in the industry. That being said, I'd like to refresh the Minister's memory from a media statement that he issued on the 5th of February, where he said, and I quote, "It is, of course, extremely important that tariff protection measures for primary steel producers do not result in higher steel prices being passed on to downstream steel-intensive manufacturing sectors. These sectors are labor-intensive, and any measures which might erode the competitiveness of secondary steel-intensive manufacturers must be avoided." And unfortunately, that is exactly what has happened since August last year. In August last year, ITAC issued a statement where they had granted tariff protection to ANSTO on a number of lines, and it was conditional to a number of objectives being met. One of them was not increasing their prices. And
we can hear you. We have requested the technical people to arrive.
And they aren't here, but we can hear you. You are being recorded.
And it's time to get this resolved.
While we are waiting for that, just some housekeeping then, in the interim, I ask for the distribution of the notice that I think our members referred to. Temporary departure from us on maternity leave for children, and I would hope you all to see that. I will talk to you again separately in the next of the shelter.
We industry,
And I agree with it. I think that what South Africa needs is a competitive, reliable steel industry. But what
I just want to remind you, I've given you an extra minute.
Thank you.
And so I do need you can come back with that. Honourable.
What we have, Minister,
but you need to finish the sentence.
But what we have, Minister, is one dominant player that dictates to government what it will do. And we have government that stands as a human shield for one big company at the expense of the downstream industry. So how are we to see any of what you've put for us as credible or in fact workable when AMSA has given you the middle finger over the last year?
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. And then the Honourable Mr. Hazen.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Minister. Excuse me, I've got a view, Minister. The ailing manufacturer and steel industry helped South Africa to avoid a technical recession by a stronger manufacturing performance. But also, I can't agree with the Deputy Minister said that PTI are protecting the steel industry. This is not happening. Not as enough is done by government departments such as the DTI. The state law advisor, which contributes very poorly drafted legislation and bills and acts and things. We see 7 out of 10 of the state law being sent back. That's not working, and that's really very concerning. I've got a deal with the previous speaker also, AMSA, actually a mid-bill. The 10% tariff increase that was given, and I see on page 10 there it covers, and I'm really from a steel industry, and it covers everything, hot roll, cold roll, and all. And I'm just mentioning this because I want to get back. And hot roll is actually from billet and things, and steel that's rolled at 1,700 degrees, and I don't get enough, and I'm tired. And cold roll from that, cool to the room temperature, but I'll give you something else about that now. AMSA's is blatantly destroying and taking advantage of the downstream manufacturers. And the special committee that was established to monitor the steel prices, as far as my knowledge, never said. It never even had one meeting. Steel prices went up, I thought six times, 7 times, went up more than 37%. The Competition Commission fines for AMSA is a drop in the, really a drop in the ocean for what this, they've done to the country. South Africa will now a very rich iron ore, the primary industry, the primary of the steel industry, they threaten, a company called, they threaten the oil, that mine, that they were going to import iron ore for cheaper prices. I mean, how blatant can that be? Iron ore industry is that skilled and the whole industry is skilled. Score Metal, it was founded in 1929. That's more nearly 100 years ago, 80 something years ago. Closed down. More than 4,000 employees lost their jobs because of AMSA. Because of AMSA's over the last 9 months, 25,000 people lost their jobs in the steel industry since that tariff was brought in. And the cost in terms of company closure and value destroyed is just as devastating. Mr. Davis, I remember you telling us at the UCT, you told us that our trade laws, legislation, etc. are being drafted and protected is the most efficient in this legal system. And I tend to differ. I think political factors seem to play a bigger role than poor technical consideration by our advanced economy. On the demand side, I think the car industry, the vehicle industry, we've seen it as well. And I just want to get to this a little thing about this. That's just something quick, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to keep you on the steel prices. It says that the price was excluded.
Locate what you want and you can come back.
Okay, but long product includes bullets. That's what steel is made for. So it doesn't make any sense at all to say that it excludes bullets. Doesn't make sense to me. Sorry, my
colleagues
haven't answered me. I also want to contribute to a meeting in energy.
Well, we noted that and I understand. So I'll ask the minister to respond now.
Well, what I really wanted to say, and I just said in your presence, is that you haven't let the facts stand, you know, I have a good speech. There are not 25,000 jobs that have been lost. School metals is not being closed. In fact, it was saved with the intervention of the IEC. So I think that, you know, you've painted a picture which is not entirely accurate. And the pricing committee has actually sat twice. So, as I say, I think before you make a speech like that, I think you ought to get a few facts right. Otherwise, you're not helping this committee to understand the reality as they stand. So that's all I wanted to say on that. But I mean, we can come back to the other questions later on.
Honourable Mr. Hazen, I'm not going to carry on with the dialogue per se, but rest assured, you will be able to come back. You did indicate you needed to leave to go to the electrical, the energy committee. And when you can come back, it would be appreciated. Thank you. After yourself, there is the Honourable Colonel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Minister, you quite correctly pointed out that the steel industry in the world is absolutely a global problem. And, you know, for members to say that, you know, South Africa is an exception to what's happening in the rest of the world, I think it's slightly unfair. But you can maybe comment on that. I think the good news is that South Africa is, together with Egypt, the only primary steel producers on the continent. And you quite correctly also said that there is opportunity for us to do business with our neighboring countries. Maybe I would like your comment on the fact that China is in command of 30% of steel production in the world, and they are aggressive in their partnership approach in Africa. You know, whether that is not, you know, a red flag for us, and what can we do maybe to outclass China with our exports in Africa. And then also on the competition board, you know, that was an initiative of the African National Congress government. It was not such things before that. So, yes, I think we need to look at strengthening the Competition Act and do certain things so that people just not pay fines and carry on doing business as usual. But there was one good news in the statement yesterday, that they will commit to $4.6 billion infrastructure investment, EMSA. Now, am I correct to say that all over the world, foundries and plants are closing down? But if you look what AMSA is doing in South Africa, it's slightly against the thing. They are not closing down as fast as others in the rest of the world.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bernhoff. And now we have the Honourable, we haven't forgotten you, Honourable Mkongi, the Honourable Mbata.
Thank you very much. My question will be brief. I think this has been forthcoming. Firstly, EastWest, we used to know it was a state-owned company and then sold to Mittal mysteriously. Even the price was never disclosed. These problems about Alesco Mittal and the results of the Competition Commission are not surprising, but what is more worrying is that irrespective of the price they pay, they may have made more money already. And I live in an area in Devon, and I have been consistently hearing stories of small players, Steve and Jacobs in particular, over the past 2 years, closing from one small one to another. And I have no idea how that has been mitigated, in as much as we have always been able to save our big companies. So my share of questions, Honourable Minister, is in our efforts to assist small medium-sized enterprises to stay open, do we attend to them when they fall apart as a result of unmitigated big problems of big players, bullies that we know of?
Thank you very much.
And now the Honourable Mkongi.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, President. Just firstly, I want to welcome the presentation from the Minister. I just want to raise some issues that are process matter, and then what have been the outcome of those particular issues. Firstly, our discussion about the crisis of steel and other strategic commodities in South Africa didn't begin in 2016. I think since 2014, we had the colloquium on industrialization and value addition of these commodities in South Africa. And there are key resolutions and proposals that came out of that particular colloquium. One of them, the minister has raised, is concerns about the import parity pricing and the proposals thereof. Two, the impact of administered prices to industrialization, value addition, and manufacturing in the country. Three, the question of the export of scrap metals. These are the issues, because if you go to our foundries, what is killing them mostly is the question of export of scrap metals. Therefore, but for me, because your person said must make comments, but for me it's very important in relation to the agreement with the Arcelor Metal, with the Competition Commission. One, who is going to monitor the implementation of the agreement? I'm very concerned. Is it still committed that we are speaking about, or is IT? Because I want this particular committee to be in a position, one, to look at the pricing plan of Accra Metal going forward. Two, an AMSA's investment plan. In the context of the investment plan, to me, the support of our downstream industries that has been suffering because of the particular of pricing system, and price fixing. Three, is the question of the jobs plan. Not only retention of jobs, but the further creation of jobs through the 4.6 billion that they are talking about. What are they planning? Because to me, it's very important that in the monitoring, we must know what is planned. Four, what are the possibilities, Minister? What can we do about this random exploitation of iron ore in South Africa? Because this thing of not adding value to iron ore in South Africa that exporting is one of the things that is killing us. Is there any measures that we can do to reduce the export of the iron ore in South Africa? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Mantashe.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the stride taken by the two departments in trying to attend to the crisis of steel in our country in support of manufacturing in particular and job creation. But I just have one question, Chairperson. You know, I think when good work isn't done, at least you must, raise the concern to say you are satisfied. We know that Rome was not built in a day, but this for us, I think, is work in progress in addressing what we've been crying over. But my one question is similarly to what happened when banks were fined because of overtaxation of his rights. AMSA now has had a settlement of 1.5 billion. Who is going to benefit out of this 1.5 billion? Is it job creation or the smaller companies that have been affected by the collusion that has been done by taxes by this giant company? Who is going to benefit out of that? And when I look at the steel committee chapters, I need to be schooled. The players that represented today, they all people are in that inner. And that bullet at the bottom there said the TINEDD are invited in that committee? What power they have? Or are we continuously to be ruled by this government? Because I hear no solid authority that the two departments have over this committee that has been set. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Manteshna. Earlier on, Honourable Williams, your hand was up in the first round, but now do I understand that you've put down?
Chief, my hand was never up. Yes, Chair.
Round responded to. Thank you. Over to your side, both ministers, Minister Davies.
Well, I will ask if the from time to time the team can come in on one or two issues, but I want to make a few general points, starting with the input from Mr. McPherson. I want to say that I think that what we have done, I just want to reinforce this, is that we have tried to deal the hand that was dealt to us under the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Now, some years ago, well, I heard from his party that the critique that you wanted to make of our initial policy action plan was that it was too heavy-handed and you preferred a light touch. Now, I want to put forward the counterfactual. If we had adopted a light touch approach, if we had said, ArcelorMittal has been involved in predatory pricing practices, and that for that reason, we will not seek to try to address the questions of the survival of ArcelorMittal, I think we would have started on a road to have gone something like this. The first thing it would have closed would have been the Greenland factory. The second one would be Saldanha Bay. And I don't think we can say that the Thunderbelt Park would be surviving either. We would have been on a road in which there was a steady decimation of primary steel manufacturing in this country. Now, I try to say, if that happened, there would be consequences. There would be consequences which would have been that we are an iron ore producer, we're not adding value, we'd have been regressing to be the producer and exporter only of primary iron ore, which somebody raised as a concern. Secondly, we would have been placing our downstream industries, which might be right now under the current market conditions, at the mercy of the vagaries of international markets and whether products were supplied or not, and whether quantities not. And that would have been called not just now, but that would have been into the future. Thirdly, I made the point that there is not enough capacity in our ports to import all of the steel products which are currently manufactured in South Africa. So we'd have congestion right now, and we would not have been having the inputs coming in for local steel manufacturers, downstream steel manufacturers. And then lastly, I mean, actually, Amazon is a very significant energy consumer. It would probably have an impact on raising energy prices. So I think there's a number of reasons why primary steel manufacturing is important. Now, if you look around the world, I think Honourable Cornell got we are in the same boat as many others. And it's quite interesting the way the discussion went in the G20. There was a sort of an approach to China from many of the developed countries, which were basically saying you must allow a market solution, you must just allow bankruptcy and whatever to take over. That's not the solution. That's been just close your blast. And the Counter Act came back and said, well, that's not what you did with your banks when the first phase of the crisis started in 2008. And it wasn't that all the banks were just starting to go under. I think that's where we are. So people are trying to manage new circumstances at global level. Now, we're not actually putting many eggs in the basket of relying on there being a global solution, but I'm just trying to say that there's this pressure that's around, and many countries are doing it. Many countries, I think, are actually conceding the tariffs without any reciprocity. They just put in the tariffs on, anti-dumping duties and so on, because they are seeing that there are closures happening in primary steel manufacturing. That's the case of the UK, that's the case of the United States, that's the case of many, many parts of the world where that's happening. Now, I want to say that we never said, and we have not said, that there will never be a price increase by ArcelorMittal. We never said that. We said that you are not allowed to use the imposition of a tariff
as a means of simply raising the price. If we give you a tariff, you're not simply allowed to just raise the price by 10% as a result of that. If the price of coking coal or whatever else goes up, I mean, we've not said that. What we said is we will monitor your pricing against the new model of pricing that has been developed. Now, and then, you know, the other obligations that we sought, we brought a lot of things together, and it is the competition finding. The competition finding was that the pricing policies for ArcelorMittal had been predatory to the disadvantage of downstream steel users. We've been arguing that for years. As the IPP policy, we've been arguing that for years, and we've been trying to use whatever policy tools we can. There have been many of them that we've been deploying. We've been seeking another steel investor in South Africa to bring our competition into the market. Now, we had an arrangement with Hebei Steel. It's been put back at it because of the situation in the global steel industry. So we can't sit around here and say we're about to have a major investment by Hebei Steel. But what we have had to try to do is to try to balance the measures that are necessary to ensure that we have primary steelmaking in this country with reciprocal commitments on the part of the beneficiaries of those, so that we actually have the minimum damage. And I think what Dr. Garstrachan said is right, that we've been trying to find a shared pain, not that somebody gets all the gain and somebody else suffers the pain. And in terms of our own balance, it's the downstream that we're concerned about the most. Because the downstream is where the jobs take place. The downstream is where you can have backup companies coming in and so on. That's what it really is about. That's been our preference. But and I think that the model we've come up with reciprocal obligations. Now, actually, there was a table. The table there, the slides haven't got the page numbers, unfortunately, but there was one on investment commitments. That 4.6 billion. It broke it down. We said we were concerned. We were seeing investment, which was one of the reasons why the local primary steel manufacturing capability is not as competitive as it should be. So we saw those as a direct result. Also, as one of the conditions now for the competition settlement. The 1.5 billion is not the biggest part of it. I mean, it's quite right that, you know, pay a fine, administrative fine, and that's it. But it is that part of it. But it's not the only part of it. The part of it is that they have to agree to the investment. They have to agree to the EBIT cap. They have to agree to those two things. And that, those are tools that we're trying to put in place to try to ensure that the pricing regime, not just now, but if there's an uptick, that the pricing regime is within the parameters, within the limits, within the circumstances we find ourselves, is as least damaging, if we put it that way, and eventually supportive of downstream steel manufacturing in this country. That's what it amounts to. So I want to say that's what we've been trying to do. Now, said right at the beginning, this has not been something that's easy. It's not been that there's a, you know, angels and devils, and you're just on the side of angels. We've had to make calls between different combinations of concessions and reciprocal obligations that both allow ArcelorMittal as the main primary steel manufacturer, but also some of the other ones, because I think that it's been IDC, as I said earlier, that ensured the score metals didn't go down. It's been IDC's investment that saved at least a few jobs in Eiffel Steel, FRS Eiffel Steel. And it's been measures like, and you know, let's be upfront about this, measures like the pricing preference and maybe an export tax on scrap metal that will ensure local foundries survive in South Africa. These are things that vested interests are fighting like mad against. It's going to be those interventions that are going to ensure that we find a reasonable balance. Now, what is going to happen? This committee that operates under ITAC, the way we set or remove tariffs in South Africa, this is the law. This is the law as it stands. We can't do anything else. It's not that ministers can walk in and say, I heard you and this is the tariff. We've got an independent body that sets tariffs in South Africa. It's called ITAC, International Trade Administration Commission. That's what it does. It has to consult, it has to hear the evidence, it has to make a recommendation, and then finally minister will agree to the recommendation. Now, the review, the steel committee is not representative only of ArcelorMittal. It's got one rep from ArcelorMittal and the rest of other parts of the steel industry that are based there.
And the DGI and the EDD are part of the process and of the deliberations. But you can't establish a committee under the law of ITAC that consists of government department representatives. So they're present, but in an advisory role. Because eventually, one of these days, the department has to advise the minister whether to accept or not the recommendation comes from ITAC. But its job is to monitor the obligations. Are they being implemented? Are they being implemented in a reasonable way? Is the pricing formula that is emerging, is it being implemented? Are the investments happening? And I think that's its job. And if it comes to a conclusion that actually there's a significant violation, which I don't think is the case now, but if it comes to that conclusion, there's a significant violation, the terms of the tariff increase are that the ITAC will apply its mind and say, well, actually, we think we should withdraw the tariffs. That's the procedure. That's the procedure that we're involved in. And I said that committee is met twice. It's functioning, and it's monitoring these obligations. And I want to say that I think that those obligations that we have extracted from ArcelorMittal are significant, or these can be significant, let's put it that way, as we move ahead. And that we will be able to hopefully, this is the balance we're trying to achieve, save primary steel manufacturing capacity in this country, at the same time, ensure some steps towards the change of behavior of primary steel manufacturers, if you want. So I completely refute the idea that we're a shield, we're echoing and doing everything that ArcelorMittal wants. The package is some of the things they want and some obligations are on their side as well. I think that's basically it. And I think it's important that all of us, and you know, maybe you should have more meetings like this. Let's see how it unfolds as we move further forward, because I think that it is something that we need to ensure that we extract the concessions that have been around. Now, what do we do for downstream companies that are in distress or something like that? Well, part of the work that's been done is to look at, are there tariff tools that we need to apply for downstream manufacturers? Can we do it in a way that we don't have the cost that they complain about for making an ITAC application? Because those are the best pieces of work. It's already on the side. We're doing that. What about the designation? What about the rebates that they may need? That's the work that's ongoing now. And I think that some of the black industrialists that we're supporting, and we've got 10 now, we're hoping to move to 30 this year, 30 next year, 40 the following year, that would be 100 to start with. But a number of them are making things like components for railway wagons and trucks that are in the steel users. And I think that we went to launch ITAC, that Gessler company is called. Those are the kind of companies that I think we need to see more of. Those are places where black industrials can become much more significant players. And I think we've got a number of support programs for them. And then I think I answered the question about who monitors. I think that the Honourable Mantas said about this is work in progress. She also made the point about the banks. And I said, these are the things that are happening globally. Actually, nobody is prepared to just simply stand outside and say, let the market decide. Because when you have overproduction, a glut, objectively, the need is to reduce capacity. That's what it means. But nobody's standing aside. It's not either. I don't think you're going to stand aside and say, let half our industry go to the wall in a market way any more than the United States was prepared to say at the start of the crisis, let the banks go to the wall. So everybody's going to try to manage it in one way and another. But those are circumstances beyond our control. I think what we try to do is with the things that are in our control is to try to act, and I think it did require action. Otherwise, the risk was we were going to lose primary steel manufacturing in this country. We had to act to give some concessions to primary steel making in this country, ArcelorMittal. Those have been the tariffs, those have been the designations, things like that, and in return seek some tough concessions on issues that we've been concerned about. So I think that's really the answer I would want to give. I don't know if the Deputy Minister or any of the team want to add, But I suggest you get an opportunity to send from your details that I haven't done.
That is important. Starting with yourself, Deputy Minister Madala, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We just want to indicate that the 1.5 million all the funds that we do in the Competition Commission goes into the fiscus. But from time to time, the U.S. would have seen the Commission only look at an agreement at that time and look at the other additional issues that might be very relevant for the development of those in that particular industry. In this case, we have had the other agreement of the 4.6, the rest of the other things that have got to do with the industries. But in others, you'd have seen that it also very goes into the real minute areas the details of the kind of a program that might be attended to. I think you would have seen in the ones for precatures, for food, and also for agri. That there were too much details on that, but it depends on the industry to industry. But there is a matter that has been raised for discussion, of course, both from the Competition Commission and the Department, as to whether we should not discuss a matter around even the fines themselves, whether we should not set them aside for the development of the industry. But it still remains at the level of a discussion. On the matters that Honorable Mkongi raised on saying, and there was a colleague here, and there were issues raised, I think that the report does cover a number of areas in response to these areas that you have indicated. But we should accept it's just work in progress. But we must indicate that with regard, say, to the 4.6 billion, right, just in addition to what the minister have indicated. We are trying to build now in the cluster and also in EDD, working with the provinces, capacity even for local level to be able to identify these people that have got the capacity and the relationship that they must have with industries wherever they are located. So that you don't come up with a policy at the top and nobody is actually exploiting it at the local level. That kind of capacity that we are trying to build at that level to assist us to do that. Unfortunately, on the scrap metal export, all indications are that whether you talk about ferrous scrap or talk about copper or talk about aluminium, the indications are that they've been a downslope in terms of your export. Whether it's a good thing or not, on one angle, it might be that for those who are exporting and also for their balance of trade, you might say it's a challenge. But also it might be an area that we should look at. If we don't have market outside, should we not increase the demand locally for those kind of product kind of product that are actually being used by other countries in using the scrap metals. So it's an opportunity in one way that you might have to look at. Thanks.
Mr. Samanga.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think also in addition to what the Minister has said, we can assist the committee with some numbers that can actually give an indication of the size of the problem that we are dealing with. When we look at the steel industry, we actually see that we have not recovered from 2008. This is almost like a carry on from what we were facing in 2008. If we take Waltrop oil, for instance, average price in 2008 were about $900 a ton. And when this second wave of the problem hit, and prices went down, no steel mill could actually survive at those prices. So from about $900 per ton in 2008, I'm looking at in January, for instance, prices in America were $175 per ton, $426 in Canada, and China $248. Somehow China would actually set the tone of where everybody else would go. But not still, no, even in China itself could actually survive at $248 a ton in January 2016. So whether there was a tariff or no tariff, AMSA was also forced to actually adjust their pricing to what China was actually doing. So in addition to what the minister said, the price increases that we actually saw from January up to now, and actually what we also don't take note of is that last year, or over, before January, AMSA had reduced prices 10 times. Some of people missed that, but prices were actually reduced 10 times. But from January actually going forward, what was then happening is every country was trying to recover from prices which were sort of in an anaerobic environment and not even could actually survive that. So we are sitting now, say in July, where prices of hot rolled coal in America have actually recovered back to $705 a ton. So those numbers, or the price increases that happened from January, cannot be attributed to tariff increases. Every country has to do something to do that. We are still seeing reduced prices coming out of China, but again, it's because China is selling excess capacity, and in some cases, it's actually disposing of inventory that they're sitting with. So that explains some of the price increases that we're actually seeing coming into the market. What should also be noted is that as a major compared to China, but at our size, we are the only country that has done actually the least to protect primary steel producers. We've only put down 20% tariff up to the gold rate. Other countries have literally put up walls around them. I mean, there have been safeguard measures, there have been countervailing measures they've actually put up. We've only put up 10%. The next wave that we're actually monitoring is because other countries have put up walls, more steel, cheap steel is actually going to be coming to our doors. And that's the next wave that we're actually trying to monitor and look at what is coming from. So I want to just stick with what the minister said, that in terms of pricing, we've done the best that we can. And the fact that downstream is underplayed, they not react quickly, is assisting them. The second thing that we also want to make the committee aware is, let me take an example of somebody who is making wheelbarrows. They can buy or they can import steel and make wheelbarrows and sell into in South Africa and into the region. But besides whatever we do around steel, affecting primary steel, there is still a wheelbarrow that is actually coming in imported from elsewhere around the world, which is actually another frontier of competition that is coming in. So depending on export incentives that are put in those in countries that are sending products into South Africa, there is not so much that a tariff on primary steel, on hot rolled coil, will not do anything to actually protect downstream manufacturers from that. So the second measure, what we are actually looking at, what ITAC is putting, what it has submitted, is looking at that. That besides what we've done on primary steel, there are still finished goods that are coming into our shows, and they are also coming into the region where we have markets.
Thank you.
just knowing that before the system winds up on you.
Thank you, Chair. So we don't want to go away from this committee and give the impression to the committee that steel prices are not going to go up. We cannot make that the place. They will go up or they will go down depending on other dynamics in the market. At the moment, with the pricing that China is actually putting on, it's going to put pressure on ArcelorMittal and another local producer, in spite of what the market is actually saying, for them to price in a competitive way. And for the record, I think the losses for AMSA last year were 8.6 billion. And all primary steel producers around the world actually made losses. Thank you, Jim.
We'd like to track this back and see what the profits were in the last 15 years. But be that as it may, it's not... I want to... Honourable McPherson, I am coming back to the committee. I just want to ensure that everyone who wants to comment here and add has done so. Right. On that particular basis, I did indicate to members they need to have a second round. I do want to respond to one thing which was more a committee issue that was raised with regard to ArcelorMittal, a direct committee issue. You indicated, Honourable McPherson, that you wanted a place on record that you had requested in a previous meeting before we rose for ArcelorMittal to be here. You did indeed make such a request. The request was an individual's request and not agreed to by the committee. We agreed, in fact, to have this meeting, joint meeting with both ministers and both committees. But we are looking at the program, and as and when some of the legislation issues which are programmed currently, if they do not arise, to give you an example, there's something I think in the, let me see here, round about the 13th or so, 14th of September, when we're looking at the copyright, amendment bill. We put these down, we don't have a guarantee it will be on that date. So as we get closer to that, we will fact-check in those issues that relate to this particular one. I think the committee would appreciate if the program is pretty full at the moment. And we will certainly liaise with the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development as well to ensure that we can work together on this area. And I'm just saying that not even having discussed it as such. All right, so back to the committee then. Comments, questions, follow-up. Right, Honourable McPherson, followed by the Honourable Williams, followed by the Honourable Dr. Cardo, followed by the Honourable Honourable Gliani. Is that right down there? Honourable Mantash and Honourable Polman, the chairperson of ADD. In that order, please proceed. And I'm just looking with all the time we've wasted, what have we got left? Right. And it's not your fault at all. Maximum 5 minutes. I'll caution you at 4.5.
Thank you, Deb. Look, I think personally that one of the biggest inhibitor to a steel industry that is efficient and competitive is ArcelorMittal itself. And I think that statement is proved by findings of the Competition Commission and the fine that has been instituted against them. And I say that, Minister, because from iron ore to the factory floor, ArcelorMittal gets it every which way. They have access to cheap iron ore in South Africa. They benefit from import parity pricing. They have tariff protection. And yet, none of their profits goes back into making their business more competitive and more successful. And there's something very, very wrong with what happens in ArcelorMittal, which we as a committee, I don't think, have even begun to scratch the surface with. And so, when I say that
fact, the government is a human shield of ArcelorMittal. My point is proven when the deputy minister says, well, you know, maybe we need to have a discussion about setting aside funds, you know, so we can develop the industry. Under no circumstance can we do such a thing for a business that has, quite frankly, ripped the ring out of the downstream market far too long and without any consequences. And actually, the road that we have embarked upon over the last few years in the steel industry has actually begun to decimate the downstream industry. The very industry that you and I, Minister, both agree has the potential to create jobs was first retaining them. And see this through the protected collusion activities that have taken place within ArcelorMittal. So we need to get to the bottom of what answers are to. But we can only do that if government starts to show that it is willing to hold the accountable. Now, the fact of the matter is, in August last year, the DGI issued a statement that said, IPAC recommendations approved by yourself said that there will be no price increases for the steel products in question because of the adjusted tariffs and pre-existing commitments to reduce prices on some products on it. That has not happened. It has not happened. And I'm more than willing to send you all of the price increase letters from AMSA on the products that received tariffs. And yet IPAC sat on hands and did nothing. They couldn't even be bothered to answer my letter to them asking, will they institute a review? Nothing. They remained quiet and AMSA continued to plough ahead without any pick or balance. So, you know, when we have a discussion about, you know, modernizing the steel industry in South Africa, about having access to steel that can develop South Africa, that that is affordable for downstream manufacturers, we need to make sure that we are actually leading the charge and setting the agenda when it comes to companies like AMSA. Because if we don't, it's the one side of the pipeline will reap all the benefits, while the other side of the pipeline has to suffer all of the pain. So, Minister, I ask you again, how do we get AMSA to play ball when they can't even stick to the very agreements that you or ITAC signed with them? You know, how do we, you know, progress down the road of ensuring a competitive steel industry when it takes us 12 months, and the pricing principles are still not even agreed to? I mean, that is shooting ourselves in the foot in a massive way. And so I do hope that we do take this with the seriousness it deserves. I do hope that we bring AMSA into this committee, because I don't think that there's anyone in this room that doesn't want
25 seconds.
Industry from production. I'm sorry, Nick. You know, I'm sorry that I actually want, you know, to get to...
Just a minute, don't waste your time on dialogue. Talk the rest of the issue.
You know, it is amazing that some of us actually take this more seriously than others, and don't worry about our game farms. But, you know, I just really hope that we can take it with the seriousness that it deserves, and, you know, that we can actually, you know, put our heads collectively together. Thank you.
Very much, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question is about the pressure that's on the downstream steel manufacturers. You talked about assisting them a little bit. I'd like to know what more is going to happen to those. I mean, we can't just assist the steel manufacturers at the front end. We need to help the manufacturers, considering that we are trying to create a manufacturing company. And I want to know if there's, I mean, a manufacturing country. We need to move away from just, you know, digging stuff out of the ground. So I want to know, is there a plan to assist the downstream steel manufacturers more? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Mpungi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to make some few proposals. as per the presentation and the responses from the both ministers and also in line with the request that we call Accelerator to come here. What is fundamental that I want to see is their plan on accrement. I want to see that. It goes to Honorable Williams, what he suggests, that what is their plan in that 4.5 or 6 billion to support the manufacturing industries downstream. That is the one. Secondly, it is a question of our ability to create a South Africa-based steel industry, an indigenous that can compete in an equal footing with ArcelorMittal. What is our appetite to do that as a state, to make sure that we encourage competition? Because this thing of monopoly is a problem. And we can see in the way that people are inventing this matter. Because I'm raising this because if we want to tamper with the Competition Act, it's fundamental that we criminalize colluding. That we criminalize the question of price fixing in the Republic of South Africa. Because if it was state entities that were doing nothing, or anyone that is working for government, there is no call for the heads to roll and people must go to prison. And why is it different in the cellar meters? That the heads must roll and these people must be charged and go to jail. Rather than just paying 1.5 billion. Another thing, Chairperson, who is a state that must encourage the recourse for affected parties? Those people who have paid prices that have been colluded upon and suffered and even such to close down, whose responsibility now becomes to reopen those industries that suffered due to the colluding and price fixing that the ArcelorMittal have been involved in? Well, it becomes now the problem of the state to help capital, you know, to reintroduce those particular industries. So it must be clear within the plan of ArcelorMittal whether they are prepared to help those industries that they have had through their price-fixing model and also the collision. The last one, Chairperson, do we have any space, policy space, I will call it dumping, this China business thing is a problem. Do we have any policy space to maneuver the protection of the South African industry against, you know, the inflating of China steel products in South Africa? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkongi, Honorable Kliani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let us start by welcoming to the presentation. Secondly, we think while we concede that indeed we've got serious challenges in South Africa, it is equally important, you know, to indicate our confidence, you know, in the leadership that we have in government, you know, in dealing with some of the issues. We think that we are on the right track and that finally we'll be able to win this battle. We also just want to indicate that we are very happy with our competition authorities. They are working very, very hard and, you know, their work should be commended. I think we have some of the best competition authorities in the world presently. What I would like to raise here, Chairperson, I'm aware that ArcelorMittal is putting forward 4 billion capital, you know. This is what they've been penalized. We don't have a problem with that. We are also aware that the DTI has got terrorists that they try to use to try and manage the situation of competition and unfair, you know, the in trying to level the playing ground there. But the question is, while ArcelorMittal may have made this commitment of 4 billion plus, and they say they are going to do something in time to assist the downstream operators. The thing is, are we in a position to go back and actually determine people to do that. Fines aside, what is it that we as government are able to do to try and redress the damage that was caused during that condition?
I know about the penalties and so on. Are we in a position to can identify the exact companies that were damaged by this collusion? If yes, is there something that we can do specifically to all those companies that were affected so that we improve their situation? This is my concern, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Keani, Honorable Mantashe. Chairperson, at some point I don't understand why the department and the entities want to protect the perpetrators of this collusion or the downstream manufacturers, and they just come out and tell us. When I forgot your name, when you spoke, you said you cannot guarantee that there will be no increases on prices of steel. And now I got this question. Can I clarify? At whose interest are you working? Are you working for those who have been robbed of their businesses in manufacturing? And as you're saying, we're prioritizing manufacturing in the country. Whose interest are you serving? One other thing, Chairperson, that I would want to request that we be exposed to is the guidelines that Treasury has developed for export tax application.
Thank you very much. Honourable Coleman, the Chair, if you want to come in right now, I just want you to intervene for a moment. Dr. Cardew is still requiring, you know, to engage on this as well. But there is a memorial service downstairs, and clearly we wouldn't want to hold anyone back for that. So, and at the same time, I think Honourable Mbata, you already indicated you had to leave at 12:30 for a meeting, another meeting. So we are going to have Honourable Coleman, the Chair of EDD, and then we are going to take you, Dr. Cardew. The meeting will continue. Thank you, Honourable Coleman. Yes. Okay, Dr. Cardew, Honourable Cardew.
Thanks, Chair. My question goes equally either to the Minister or the Deputy Minister. I was interested, given the global glass seal, which you put at 400 million tonnes a year, which others put at 600 million tonnes, what your views are on the potential establishment by the Industrial Development Corporation of this $5 billion steel plant in conjunction with the Chinese steelmaker Hebei. Would it be sustainable from a job point of view, or is likely to be another job loss-maker, as we have seen with other companies in the steel sector over the last year? Secondly, under your outlook for SAF-7, you say that significant infrastructure expansion and construction activity will take place on the continent, and that we should gear up accordingly for the demand of steel that this will entail. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm generally ignorant on this matter, but does infrastructure expansion need only most basic kinds of steels, rebar to reinforce concrete and pipes of tube and water, etc., which everyone makes, and not the high-value special steels and coated sheets or alloys that the automotive sector uses? And then finally, is it true that SA and Egypt are the only producers in the region? I was under the impression that Algeria, Senegal, Nigeria, Ethiopia also had big steel plants to meaning the exports to the rest of the continent are necessarily given. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Coleman, Chair of EDD.
Thank you very much, Honourable Parker. Mine is just to also add to what my colleagues have already alluded to, especially in questioning the role that the department of the government is playing
with relation to protecting the downstream in the industry, the steel industry. I think the first part, I think where we could say we've actually done well and made a mark is around the very same pronouncement of yesterday on the competition authority's investigation outcome. I think that is quite positive, and to me, it's the beginning. The questions were there, what exactly is going to happen to ensure that those downstream industries benefit from the penalty that was imposed, which is a very good question. But as you all know that, if you recall very well, when we're dealing with issues of measures, the two departments or ministries imposed or tried to challenge by imposing some conditionalities, which were vehemently opposed in, from other countries. And irrespective of that happened and conditions were put for other players, for those dominant companies, consequent to that one of the measure. And a lot has been happening afterwards. Irrespective of the fact also that the competition authority do not have certain powers as per the law. I think I want DM Masuku to speak to the impending changes in the law with regards to helping actually the competition authorities in criminalizing the companies that you know, are found to be acting, you know, in an unbecoming way when it comes to competition issues. And at the end of the day, disadvantaging other role players, especially the emerging and small medium enterprises that have also the potential of creating a lot more jobs. And I would support that some of the colleagues, when they say some countries that have been closed, were the result of the big role players that are deprived in them of real growth and therefore deprive more South Africans of jobs that are so much required. This is one area I wanted us to look at, that maybe the minister, the DM, should clarify on that, because we would want to know as to when is the process starting of amending the legislation, so that we are able then to empower our competition authorities even further. But in respect of that also, I want to agree with Honorable Nkongi on the plan from AMSA. What is very important, you cannot come up with conditionalities and you're not able to follow up on how that is going to be. But we need to monitor, and if we have to develop monitoring mechanism, we have to develop it on the basis of a plan, a structured plan in place. So for us to do that, we want to know how. And I'm not also happy that this is the penalty is over 5 years, to be paid over 5 years. I mean, to me, it's not something that could be just loan to them like that, so that they feel the pinch. Right now, they're going to feel the pinch.
Yes, you raise a very important point. I'm glad you have raised it. I went and talked to it. This 5 year, I mean, it's too long, absolutely too long. A lot can change in that time. And we could learn a thing or two from Nigeria about how to oppose penalties, I can tell you. But I do appreciate the other points raised in this regard. I'm not going to reiterate them. They have been raised. Suffice to say that in one of the issues, there was a reference made to the track records of DTI. And during the oversight in January of this year, or rather last year, we went to Kocha, among other areas, and Agri Steel, DCG, Kocha, IDZ,
we're all in agreement that a total ban on export of scrap metal should be done. We haven't got a total ban, but there has been quite a series of restrictions that the Minister, I think, of EDD has developed in this regard. The other thing is, again, the ICAP came in here. The South African Peace Service be established, a task team, etc., to deal with illegal export of scrap metal. So that task team of SAPs would work with ICAP. And quite frankly, it would be quite pertinent to see exactly where that is. Because that's over a year, it's 18 months now. And these things do tend to get lost here. And then with a 5-year track record, I wouldn't even know who the MPs are going to be here to track it down, or the DMs or ministers. Be lucky to see a DG's all there. But over to yourselves now. That's the Minister of Trade and Industry, to be followed by the Deputy Minister of EDD.
Thank you very much. Let me start on, I mean, it is under EED, but I would like a comment about the direction of the competition remedies over the last few years. So under the leadership of Minister Hotto, I mean, what's happened is the movement away from just an administrative fine to commitments around corrective behavior. I think that's what it's been. So although the criminal penalties are not there in the arsenal at this point, they're not being applied, if you look at things like the bread price issue onwards, a number of these ones, you'll find that in all cases there is some administrative fine, but that's not the main content. The main content is some commitment to remedial action, some commitment to invest in something or other, maybe it's downstream, or to correct the behavior that is at stake. I think that is a direction, and I think you can see if you look at the Competition Commission agreement. It's not the EDD department or the government, it's the Competition Commission has reached the settlement with ArcelorMittal. In some of those cases you face the question, pull a company down with a huge fine, or do you, correct, keep this capacity in place, or correct behavior? Those issues that we face. So I think if you look at it, it's a 1.5 billion fine, but that's not the main issue. The main issue is probably the 4.6 billion of investment. And that is the investment that is intended to make the steel industry under ArcelorMittal more competitive than it has been. One of the problems we've had about the pricing has been it's uncompetitive than we investing. That's one of the concerns that we've been having. And then on top of that, there are the other commitments that are there about the pricing regime. And I think that the pricing regime has been able to come to a head, if you like, because of the competition finding. If we hadn't been that, I don't know where we would have been on a finding on that, just in return for tariffs. I'm not sure we would have found a solution. So I want to come to the point again, the Honourable MacPherson. I said we are not dealing with angels and devils. There's an angel and we're on the side of the angel. It's a much more mixed picture that we've had to deal with. We have not over the years, and do not now, as a result of the competition fighting, among others, think that the pricing policy that's been followed by ArcelorMittal over the years has been a correct one. We share the view that it's been damaging to downstream industries. That is what we've said. That's what we continue to say. What we try to see is a way in which we change that. And I think that I want to say that we have had to face, I think, not just hypothetical, but a real possibility that primary steel manufacturing in this country could have been, let's say, substantially reduced, if not on a track towards actual elimination. That was what we would have faced on the one hand. Now, what I keep saying is we did not simply say, ArcelorMittal, what do you want? Here it is, it's yours. We did not say that. We said, if we do this, what do we get in return? That means the whole debate and the whole discussion. That's what we're taking a year, if you want. To reach the competition finality. That's why it has taken that. It's been a process of saying, if we do this, what do we get in return? If we do this, what do we get in return? And our emphasis has been on more competitive behavior, less predatory practices by ArcelorMittal, less abusive monopoly. And by the way, I was to say that what we have discovered is that there's probably a case for looking at the steel traders and the markups of steel traders as part of the where you've got a dominant player there. That's another issue. So I think that what we've got to face
And I think that Minister, maybe you might be one day, but maybe not. Mr. McPherson, I think you've got to tell us honestly. You say that you want Oscar Mittal to be held accountable. So do we. You say that they've done all these things to the detriment of the small, downstream industries. So do we. Now, I think that what you've got to be honest about is saying that in the light of the circumstances we find ourselves in, would you not have increased the tariffs in the first place, or secondly, would you withdraw the tariffs now? I think you've got to answer that question, because there would be consequences to a decision like that. There would be consequences. The consequences would be that there would be a reduction in downstream manufacturing. Primary steel manufacturing. Now, you read the sentence that I think you've gulped because you realize that you've given it away. We said there will be no price increases because of an adjusted tariffs. That's what we said. Because of the adjusted tariffs. If we raise the tariff, you can't use that to raise the prices. We didn't say the prices can never rise from this day onwards. We never said that. I challenge you to say the time that we said that. We didn't say that. We said you cannot raise prices because we've adjusted the tariffs. That's what we said. Now, I think that what we've got is a situation where we have a structure in place which is monitoring compliance of ArcelorMittal with the obligations they have agreed to, and which are part of the settlement and a part of the terms and conditions for the tariffs that we said earlier. Now, that was part of it, and the other part of it is now the competition settlement, which I think is changing that in. And we've got a structure in place which is this committee, ITAC and ISAC. Now, I think it's perfectly reasonable that Parliament should from time to time be looking at, is this actually happening? Because it's in our interest to make sure it happens. It's not not in my interest to seal ArcelorMittal and let them out come with some froth and frills and whatever, and a PR exercise. We don't want to see that. We want to see a change in behaviour that makes primary steel manufacturing more competitive and is less damaging in price terms to downstream industry. That's what we want to see. Now, I think we will certainly, as ministers, we will be oversee what it is that is happening as a result of this committee and so on, and wanting to make sure. I mean, it's not our certainly not, I can assure you, it's not mine, and it's not Minister Montel's intention to let anybody off the hook or to just play fast and loose with the commitments. We want to see those commitments fulfilled, because I think those are the minimum requirement to make the steel industry more competitive in South Africa. And that gets up to Dr. Kandu's point. He said in the past, in different times, that one of the things that we thought was important was to introduce more competition. More competition. I said that myself to the steel making. That's why we looked at alternatives. Here they investment, I mentioned it actually, it was supposed to be, the last time it was active and live was a discussion about whether it was going to Mpumalanga or going to Richards. That was a discussion. Unfortunately, it is now on a slower track. That is not dead, but it's not proceeding as fast as possible. It's not alcohol that's making it like that, it's got to do with global conditions and the investment decisions. We would certainly like to see another steel maker come in. And use the other resource which we've got, which is the high-carbon steel, and the other technologies that go along with that, and introduce more competition into the head. Now, let me then on these other points. The infrastructure expansion on the continent, I don't think it's just, it's not just the steel that's used in construction. Take, for example, in South Africa, as we designated by the AU, as a railway centre for the African industrialization process and the African infrastructure rollout. I think that's a very significant one. So the railway industry in South Africa, the railway manufacturing industry in South Africa, is not just for France and Transnet. It's potentially in the future for the whole continent, but also with partnerships we have to build with other parts of the continent. And that will demand other steel products as well. And I think that's at least part of the answer. It's not just those products. I think that the answer about Saka needed, I think it's probably to do with primary steel, I think somebody else answered that, whether it's scrap-based smelters, maybe other scrap-based smelters around other parts of the country, but I think somebody else answered that. So let me come back to Mr. Williams's question, Honourable Williams's question. What are we trying to do for downstream? Well, I think, first of all, there's the whole tariff rebating
So one of the cons, one of the things that follow from the decisions we've already taken, there may be other applications. I mean, this has already been issued, but others have put serious you know, countervailing duties and anti-dumping duties and stuff like that. I think that we might consider some of these when the applications come through. Maybe safeguard and anti-dumping. I don't know, those applications have come, but they have to go through the ITAC process. They have to go through that. But there are other things that we do, of course. I mean, I think the backing dust in this program, the localization. These are all policy tools that we can use to support downstream steel makers. And I think that that's the Deputy Minister. I can see it's here, and I'm going to read it out. But the IDC has made a number of resources available to support a number of companies in downstream manufacturing. So I think it's all part of the plan. And we should remain committed to this is where most of the jobs are. If you look in IFAP, the current IFAP, we say that we need to have a focus on the much more labor intensive sectors. And we find it. Agro processing, agriculture value chain, is component manufacturing in automotives and in rail. And things like clothing and textiles, that's what we say. So two of them are covered by this. Then I think that alright, so I won't say, I don't think we're just protecting the perpetrators and damaging the downstream. I think we're trying to do that. We're trying to make choices between trying to preserve primary steel making, getting to change its behavior, use policy tools, and that's what I think we've been trying to do. And then the ban on the export of scrap metal and the SIMS process. Well, I think I did mention it. That the Minister of EED has introduced a price preference system. I mean, I don't know how many times that's been into court. It's in court now. You know, the vested interests don't want to let it go. By the way, some of the places that we export, I mean, I just want to just say something, just comment on something that Deputy Minister said. I'm the Minister of the Trade. I'm not interested in exports of scrap metal because we can, I'm the Minister of Industry, and we can see that it's better to use the scrap metal in South Africa to support the production of products here, which could be value-added products. But we are actually exporting, I'm not going to mention the country, but we're exporting scrap metal to at least one country, and there's a very significant item in our exports to that country. That does not allow its own scrap metal to be exported. That's what we do. So, I mean, you know, look, within the framework of what's legal and what our law allows and what we trade agreements are allowed, we're trying to find our space. I think that the, I don't know exactly where the National Treasury is up on export taxes is, but perhaps we can, maybe somebody else knows that. And then on the illegal export, I think that bill, I mean, that bill has actually been developed quite quickly. It's in the realm of justice and police. It's in the security cluster. And it's basically about the much more significant and severe penalties that you suffer if you are involved in the theft of infrastructure-related stuff. That's what that bill is about. And it's significantly, I don't have the details of the Deputy Minister does, but it's significantly up the penalties. And there's a few changes in onuses and stuff like that about people who are trading in scrap metal that is actually stolen or purloined from infrastructure. Cable theft is what you could call it. There's more than that. It's every piece of metal that's used in infrastructure is potentially vulnerable. That's my answer, so I'm going to let the Deputy Minister take
it on. Deanna Suko.
Thanks, Minister. Just to start by on the issue around the criminalization, I think from the 1st of May 2016, Section 73A of the Competition Amendment came into effect, and it criminalizes. 2016. It criminalizes activities of directors and managers who cause a firm to fix prices, allocate markets, and aggressively tender for up to 10 years of prison terms. So it's a response that I'm trying to give to the chair and Honorable Mkongi. Honorable Mkongi again, around 37 billion over 6 years has been dispersed by the IDC in support of small industries in auto and transport and machinery and equipment and basic matters. So it's part of the support we do there. But also just to indicate that part of the Black Industrialist program arises from this kind of support. When you begin to see that in as much as we have support, financial support, but you don't have more of entrants coming in. So what you do is you start designating, you know, money to chunks that support a particular, you know, sector, that you, I mean, main particular section of the society that is actually remaining behind. So it's part of the transformative processes that you have. Dr. Carter says, in the current state of the global environment on steel, why do you decide to invest in an industry that is actually uncompetitive? Are you investing are you actually delaying the effect? That's my thing. I think, Dr. Tado, we had to do that because, as you have the minister has indicated, that the steel industry has got a potential for us to de-industrialize more. We've got more demand, even ourselves have got infrastructure. But if you look at the investment that is going to Haifa, it's on specific area where we think that we have a competitive edge, and it's a standing industry that we have invested over the years and standing there, and only thing that you can allow it to do is to be brought down to be a scrap where people can just say, but also in that area it is key because it has employing like 300 people in there. So you save the jobs, and also you restructure the way in which you are approaching your investment. The previous one did indicate that they didn't focus on further investments for the future. So that's part of the precondition that if you go in here, there must be an indication of how they're actually going to invest into the future. So we're not going like blindfold, or the ITC is going there blindfolded. It is looking at, yes, saving the jobs, yes, saving the industry, but at the same time, investment that allow the company to grow and become more competitive. So they have the basic principles that are there. The other aspect that I want to respond to is with regard to the issue of set aside. What we're saying is that fines go to fiscals. So if we were to look at broader benefits, is that it benefits us all as citizens. But we're saying there are that discussions that are on that people are raising to say, why shouldn't you take these amounts that are coming from a fine and set them aside to develop the industry? Whether downstream and so it is a discussion. It's not a policy. It's not there. I'm just saying the measure that you're raising is not new. It's also raised within players. It also raised within the government institutions. Okay.
Thank you, DM.
Can I
ask DDD Strachan?
Honourable Chair, just to perhaps answer the question by the Honourable Dr. Carter, he's absolutely right. The export of long steel products, rebar and so on and so forth, including others sold on the bay, are to Africa, and our market demand analysis in infrastructure, in ports, in mining, exploitation and so on and so forth suggests that there's a very significant opportunity there. What there isn't at the moment is an opportunity for flat high-end value products. We are doing a piece of work which is about the steel customer is doing short, medium, long-term work. the long-term work is, what would it take in circumstances where we have a small domestic market and a small regional market for high-end flat products, some of which are technology intensive and require economies of scale. And so, you know, it's very difficult to say to a steel producer, we now want you to produce high-end, flat, value-added, high-technology-intensive flat steel products if there isn't a market for it. But, you know, that is a long-term perspective of the steel work that we are doing. But I suppose there's one thing worse than exporting long steel products to export destinations, including Africa, and that having no exports at all in the steel industry, because volumes in steel are critically important given the energy intensity in particular. And so, you know, I think we should be, we should not make the perfect the enemy of the good, and exports of long products is an important part of the value chain.
Looking at iTech, Mr. Singer, I don't see the name here, not one I'm really familiar with. Right. Is that Mr. Sengiwe? ITEC. Because you're the chief commissioner of ITEC there, aren't you? Indeed. Right. Now, any comment?
No, the minister has covered.
Well, aren't you so fortunate? Right. Well, it's good to have a kind of backup, as they say in the car reforms. But anyway, it is important that we track this down. I'm just looking at the section relating to collusion and of causing or permitting a firm to engage in prohibitive practices. Now, I understand although that act was passed here in Parliament, presumably in 2009, this only became effective, the distinction specifically, in May 2016. And so it's only now that it's become effective that you're able to, and I'm also looking at the chair because I know she was also concerned with this, the chairperson of EDD, that you will now be reviewing it in the, you know, perhaps to consider amendments, or have I misunderstood?
We did provide for, I mean, there was a discussion on the amendment, and it is the act itself, you know, provide for that. That by the 1st of May, that act is actually, I mean, that part of the amendment is actually effective.
Do you think that's been criminalized? Only effect from May. I just think you should come in here, chairperson.
Yes, if you recall, well, the amendments were done, I think, long ago, before 2009, but they were only effected now in this particular one in May. But then the other amendments that are coming. So I just wanted to find out just when are those coming, because we were promised that this year there will be the process will be kick-started, and by the end of the third term the Parliament would have received actually the first draft of amendments.
Yes, certainly, Minister.
No, I mean, it's quite correct that the bill was through the Parliament before 2008, and it was, before 2009, it was by the DPI that went and he introduced the possibility of criminalisation. Now, what I think is very interesting is that I suggest that we come back and have a little bit of the research and see who
among those parties that are now calling for us to be throwing the everything in the kitchen sink at everybody, what did they say at that time? Because my recollection is there was a lot of opposition to this particular provision. And I think that that it's taken a while to come to the regulations and everything, but now, as the Deputy Minister is saying, it's now available as a tool. But even so, these issues crop up in, for example, the construction cartel. Is the outcome that we want to see all the CEOs in orange suits, or is it that we want to see the industry change? I mean, where does it go? Or what is the combination of that? I think it's always going to be a decision like that in these matters. But I think it'd be interesting to just do the historical research on what needs to do that. Thanks.
That's very pertinent, and we may in fact even certainly from us, if you'd ask the department, they seem to have a lot more resources than we do here in Parliament. But also, I'm sure the chairperson of EDD, Honourable Colvin, will not be letting this go either. And I must say, in the few years that I've been chairing trade and industry, I've seen a fair amount of somersaulting, which is why I keep some archives. But it is useful, but it is also useful to try and understand perhaps what persuaded those who were saying don't throw the kitchen sink to now say a gentle pat like in 5 years spread it. I don't know. Maybe we were a little bit too persuasive and our ears were too ready. But I do think we've got to be realistic. We don't want to kill industry. No. No one sitting here wants to do that. So that's any industry. At the same time, it is important for us to monitor the strategic industries, etc., in the country, and the relevant legislation, regulation, to check whether in the current environment they are still as sharp as we had intended them. Or do they need some qualification, modification, amendment? And we do need to do this, members, and I'm saying this, and I haven't had a one-to-one just on this phrase, but I would certainly hope that we can work with EDD, the Portfolio Committee, jointly on these areas of competition, even if it means going to your Portfolio Committee, Chairperson, when it's convened. Because we don't want to allow the private sector to feel, well, those two are separate, we'll tackle this issue with DGI, then when we swing by EDD, we'll tackle the other aspects. If we sit jointly, both from the ministries as well as the Portfolio Committee of Parliament, we're more likely to be more effective on the issue that we're overlighting and unpacking, as it were. But I'm looking to the committee now, the members, and to say, obviously we'll get this in a report. It's a very important engagement. It's not often, as you know, Honourable MacPherson, that we ring-fence an issue and dedicate the entire meeting to it. It's probably one of the few or rare occasions we do it, but it is important. But unfortunately, it's going to be very difficult to ring-fence this amount of time again this year because of our own schedule. But let's not let it go off the radar. Let's all keep our minds on the issue, and we welcome any inputs from members coming either directly to the chair or to one of the committee secretaries in this regard. Now, having said that, there may well be still certain areas which, on reflection, we believe we should have covered and we didn't, we forgot. And we will then put these in writing to you, both ministers in this regard, the DDGs, acting DDGs and the rest, and give you adequate time to come back to us in this regard. And then, members, when we take this forward, I think it can certainly be necessary to pass these minutes jointly. I'm looking at the chairperson as well, because we were all participating actively in this. So thank you for your time. My apologies for what occurred technically here. I'd ask the trade industry to remain behind for just a minute, because there are just one or two areas that have come up, and largely it's some of the invitations we get. I just mentioned them, which I did before we rose. One is the International Astronautical Congress. The other one is gambling and the, what's it, Pomalela, etc. The other is the grooms, etc. As we all know, gambling, we are awaiting, is that right, Minister, the impending legislation in this regard. All right, so that's that issue. But when we undertake that legislation, it is important for us to pick up the policy, reread it, before we start dealing with the legislation itself, and to pick up the report on the remote gambling bill, which you know was tabled and processed by this committee arising from the Honourable Hill Lewis in this regard. There's a copyright bill coming up, and members who have ever been on trade and industry, which I think is all of you other than myself, and Jordan, but I say he's not here at the moment, will have to ensure that you do your own reading in this regard. We will ensure you have got the relevant documentation from the Intellectual Property Laws Amendments Act, I think it's called, that particular one, because you need to have that at the back of your minds as well before we get into the copyright as well. A separate piece of legislation, the performer's protection. Is that right?
I think it's all about, most of it is about needle time rights for performers in South Africa. It's quite an important transformative piece of legislation, and it's an outcome of the Farlam Commission, not the one that was dealing with Marikana, but the same person was dealing with these matters before.
Where are we meeting tomorrow? At what time? If it is the same venue, I want the technical team here at 8:30 checking. Please, please. Right, Honourable Williams? So I saw you bending forward, I wasn't sure. All right. On that particular note, meeting the committee adjourned until tomorrow in the same venue at 9:00. Yes, same venue. That's why I'm worried.